Well, good morning, everybody. It's Larry with the still scratchy voice here on 3K12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening today. It's March 19th, and we have a show that we were supposed to do about 3 weeks ago, and my guest lines blew out. What can I tell you? So my wonderful guest, the superintendent of schools in Los Gatos, California, okay, the Los Gatos Union School District, Diana Abati. She couldn't call in. We rescheduled for today, okay, and I am just thrilled to have her here because we're going to be talking about a subject that I have rarely talked about here, and that's school facilities management, which is a key thing. And I became interested in this when I met at TCEA, a company called Facilitron, and they're at Facilitron.com. And we'll talk about them during the show. They will help you manage your facilities. And some of the things they do are absolutely fascinating. We were going to do the show when Diana was going to, she was about to speak at the Coalition for Affordable School Housing Conference in Sacramento, California. That was the show that we couldn't get through on the guest lines. So we're going to talk about what she presented and some good management strategies to make your school sites work for you. All right, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. That's our website, and we archive every show there, and our schedule's always up there with easy click-through so you can listen. So I hope you follow through on that. And also, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at EduTalkRadio. Actually, friend us on Facebook. Okay, Diana's near Facebook out in California in Los Gatos. Okay, Diana, I'm Larry Jacobs, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you for having me this morning.
It's a pleasure, and I apologize for that mess a few weeks ago.
It
made me crazy. Well, it made me crazy because I wanted to promote your appearance at this Coalition for Affordable School Housing, okay, which is interesting right there. I want to start right there. When I first looked at what that was, I thought, what did that mean, that there were kids living in the schools or something? Can you affordable school housing. Okay, that's not what it means. Do you want to go over that conference for a second and just say what that is that you're obviously a member of and speaker at?
Sure. The CASH conference, which I'm abbreviating, is a conference for leaders in school districts, superintendents, assistant superintendents, facility directors, also for board members and community members to get an understanding of what we can do, public educators can do to help fund schools when it comes to anything related to schools, to kids, to communities. So it's a wealth of information, and I highly recommend it for anyone who's interested in what we can do, how we can improve facilities for kids around the nation.
And is it a national organization or just in California?
This is the California one, but there are other similar ones across the nation.
Okay, and California's big enough that it counts, right?
There are a lot of school districts in California.
Oh, yeah.
It was really well attended. Yeah, I would agree that.
Oh,
and California is an interesting state when it comes to funding public facilities. So that's why this whole conference was interesting and appealed to me when I wanted to present.
Great. And let me ask you that. Is California good or bad in promoting school facilities when you said that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's top in the nation. Getting funding for schools has been a challenge, especially with Prop 13 years ago. There's little to no funding when it comes to school facilities. There's only a couple of mechanisms to get funding in California. And one of them is to pass a school bond, which Los Gatos did years ago. We passed a $120 million bond, and it's a really arduous process, and you need voters to get that. But as far as coming from the state, it's really difficult to get funding.
Wow, and I'm glad you got that through on there. Tell us about Los Gatos School District, your school district. How long have you been there? What's the demographics, et cetera?
So Los Gatos is a tiny little community right in the foothills of Santa Cruz Mountains in Silicon Valley. So think of it this way, very wealthy county, Santa Clara, Silicon Valley. Everyone knows about that. But Los Gatos sits right against the foothills of the mountains, and it's about 15 square miles. There are five elementary schools in the school district, and it's a beautiful little town, but there is no community center. There are no facilities for rec centers, for senior centers, and things like that. So the school district's come to the aid to help seniors and youth in general to provide recreational services for the town of Los Gatos.
Well, and what's your school district, the demo of the school district, if I may ask?
So there's, it's about 33 there. So there's two school districts in Los Gatos. There's the elementary for which I work for, and there's five schools, and those are 3,300 students, mostly white population and high socioeconomic school district. So very wealthy in that regard, one of the top in the nation as far as wealth. But as far as facilities, we're lacking quite a bit.
That's an interesting dichotomy right there. Okay,
yep.
We have to talk about that. And you're the, if I heard you correctly, you're the elementary school, the five elementary school superintendent, is that correct?
Correct. And there's one superintendent for the high school.
And what about middle school?
So
where does that sit in?
Oh, so the elementary is considered K-8, kindergarten through eighth grade. So it's four elementaries and one middle school. That's what I'm the superintendent for. And then there's the high school superintendent. And he is the high school superintendent for Los Gatos and Saratoga. So they're called a joint union high school district.
Okay. Thank you, Diana. I always like to hear about school districts and the differences between them. It's actually interesting. I do a lot of work with the superintendents in Illinois, and they, too, are broken into elementary and high school districts, okay, which is very different from where I live now in Maine and where I grew up in Philadelphia, where it was always just always K-12 districts. It's interesting to me, okay? Which do you like better, K-12 or the K-8 and then the high school?
Yorker, so I have to say that I'm born and raised in New York, who came out to California to come to school, and I would say that there's a lot more continuum in a K-12 school district. You can do a lot more when things break up, and it's trying to find the resources, and I personally feel that a K-12, you could probably offer a continuum of services, facilities, and programs, so... But I live in California now, so I'm dealing with that.
There you go. And it's nice to see an immigrant from New York do so well in California.
Yeah.
Welcome to California, Diana. How long have you been out there?
I went to UCLA years ago, and so I've been out here about 20-somewhat years. So it's not I still think New York is my home. So.
I was going to say you graduated UCLA, so now that you're 27, you've been there 5 years. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Good, thank you.
No, you're welcome. Okay. But now, I ran into Facilitron at TCEA, and obviously you're close to them and you're working with them. And we're going to talk about the way, what they do, et cetera. But I'm curious, what was your speech about? I'll give you the title. I think the title, okay, was Creative Solutions the Facility Use? Am I correct?
Right, correct.
When you spoke?
It is.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
It's Creative
I
Solutions
demand,
because it's – well, I'm trying – so as a superintendent, I'm really trying to find ways, creative ways to find funding for schools without putting a burden on anyone in the community. So I think we found a niche with working with Facilitron and using this California Civic Center Act to help us. And I just wanted to provide that information for anyone else across the nation that could help them try to figure out their facilities so they could recoup some costs within their community.
I have to get down to the nitty-gritty of this. What happens? Okay, you're looking for a way, if I'm hearing you correctly, your facilities are good, I would assume that, but you're trying to make them more community-oriented. Is that what you're really dealing with?
No, so let me tell you a little bit about the story of Los Gatos. So in 1970s,
sure.
The town of Los Gatos decided to give up its recreational centers. And therefore, what happened in the 1970s, the school districts, the elementary and the high school district, came together and saved the recreation services and formed a joint powers agreement. And what that means is we came together and decided that if we formed this organization, we could continue to offer youth and adult services to kids by providing our facilities almost at no cost to the members of the community. So the school districts, and I want to say this is a fundamental guiding principle in Los Gatos, the school districts are community assets. And we know that they're part of the public, and I wanted to make sure that we continue to do that. So since the 1970s, we were doing that. However, We were doing it at the cost of student programs. We were giving the programs away since the 1970s. We were not regaining enough costs, and let me just say cost neutral amounts, to maintain the facilities over time. So we were losing hundreds of thousands of dollars in student programs by providing this other after-school service to the community for seniors and for youth leagues, anything from soccer, Little League, lacrosse, to Girl Scouts. And the school district did not want to make any money on it. We just wanted to recoup its expenses to pay for water, for electricity, for custodial support over time. So that's what we were trying to do. So our guiding principle was that we value the community partners and everyone in it. We just needed the community to help us because the state wasn't helping us maintain these facilities over time. So that was the story there. So when Facilitron came, now you're talking, this is a story of patience, persistence, and a lot of humility. When Facilitron came along, their online platform allowed the school district a mechanism to recapture the usage by league, by organization, so that when you could have actually constructive conversations with different leagues saying, look, you know, you're utilizing the facility just as much as, you know, the school is during the day. We need you to help us recoup and pay for the electrical bills or the water bills. We didn't have that information before. I mean, could you imagine having an uninformed conversation with someone saying, hey, we need you to pay, you know, a lease payment? And everyone saying, of course, we're not going to pay that. We've never had to. We haven't had to for 50 years. Well,
we
in
don't
California.
Even know what it is. We don't even know what it is. So what happened? Tell the rest of the story. Yeah.
Oh, so what happened in 2014? So as public educators, we're always looking for leverage. In 2014, the California Civics Act got passed. And the Civics Center Act said that school districts were allowed by law, to recoup just reasonable costs for usage that never existed prior to 2014. So you could imagine there was no way to do it prior to that. And so Facilitron comes along. We now have an education code that allows us to do that. And now we can have some interesting conversations. Well, here's the humility conversation part of all of this. Beginning conversations without data is a lot of apologizing. And my business department started that, which is the part where I come into the picture. And I realized going too fast, too quickly is never a good idea. I mean, my business department, very well-intentioned, were on it. They wanted to do this. But having conversations takes a long time. And without data, you go nowhere. I mean, there's nowhere to go. So that's where Facilitron really helped us out. So that's what the whole presentation was about.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So my question is, so with Facilitron, and I don't want this to be an ad for Facilitron, so to speak, but we're talking about it, and it's a great way to manage facilities, so it's all part and parcel of the same conversation. Mm-hmm. So what they allowed you to do with their software, I am assuming, okay, is to break down those costs so that the Girl Scouts or the Rec League – or the seniors in town, okay, could see that they're costing this. They're not quite, you know, we want schools to be part of the community, but their efforts within the schools are costing the schools, I'll make up a number, they're in particular, whoever it might be, $12,000 a year.
Correct.
And we have to recoup dollars. Now, you go ahead.
Yeah, it did a lot more than that. So you have to hear the other thing about school districts. We have limited resources, right? We have most of our money goes into teachers, and so 85% of our budgets are mostly to put into the classroom. So we also don't have the personnel to manage facilities. So you have one person managing five school sites, 10 sites. So what Facilitron was able for us to do was to manage the requests that were coming in. So it allowed us to manage the school program requests, the teacher requests, curriculum requests, and then outside requests, and we call those the community stakeholder requests. It allowed us to manage the maintenance requests, because when something broke down, we also heard from our partners. I mean, it's easy to call the superintendent up and say that, you know, the fields aren't maintained, but the system allowed us to actually track it, say, hey, put that maintenance request in and we'll kind of address it. It also allowed us to, this is really important, to assess the community groups that had the long-standing relationships within the community versus trying to open up the facilities to everyone. So when you have beautiful school sites, everyone comes out of the woodwork and wants a piece of the action, right? But you still needed to maintain those ongoing relationships with those partners that you've had since the 1970s. It did more than that. It provided then utilization reports that showed us how much each of these, you're right, groups, anything from this lacrosse to soccer, used. And then we can go back. We could also then look at it historically over the last couple of years. And then we could also track, you know, then the most important part of that, well, not the most important part, the other element was in the maintenance labor. What did labor really cost, right? Because what we kept getting was, from all the leagues, we offer in-kind services. Well, in-kind services with no dollar amount is really tricky I'll give you an example. One of the leagues told us that they were spending $100,000 in in-kind services. And when I had that conversation in my office, I looked at them. I said, wow, for $100,000, I could hire 2 field people to help us maintain the field. So if you could work with me, you don't have to go get volunteers and do in-kind services, and we can hire. And I promise you that if we could, you know, in a year or two's time, if we can track this and you can start paying the utilization fees, you have my word that we'll hire, you know, groundskeepers to help maintain the fields. That was a great example of one. So these utilization reports really showed actual costs versus, you know, in-kind volunteer time, which was really hard to track.
And when they saw, okay, well, let's take the I'll use the soccer league. It doesn't matter. Okay, so when they see how much it actually costs, what's their reaction? Okay, any given league or whatever, do they say, "Oh my God, now we really do need to pay for this somehow"? What's the reaction?
Yeah, no, it's not as easy as that. That way,
I had
a
feeling, but it's a good way to phrase the question.
Yeah,
but
it is a good question. I think the reality is that it takes time, and that's my patience and persistence, right? It's having lots of conversation, and I've learned that as a public education, that, you know, I think that you can come to a common ground, but, you know, when you have leagues that are used to just not charging their users any dollar amount, let's just say they hardly charge the user anything, and now they have to increase their fees to pay for that. They understand that, but it takes time. So you can go through a whole cycle of a whole year before they can change their fees, before you can recoup any of those dollars. For example, little leagues, a little league person's paying $200 for the season, right? You're having a conversation in January. Well, you can't expect the little league to increase their fees for that season, for the upcoming season. So you have to wait a whole other year for them to increase their fees to recapture their costs. It doesn't mean that they don't have assets on their books, but to keep the relationship going in a positive way, these are lots of one-on-one conversations with each group, every single group. And that's what the Solitron allowed us to do, was to track all of that, to have these conversations, to manage things, to manage expectations. So it was it's still a work in progress, cycles, right, that happen. And a New Yorker who's not used to all these different types of leagues and different sports and who wants it, so I had to learn to fix it. I'm serious. I played stickball on the street and football in the snow. So understanding what everybody wanted was really challenging, and trying to manage all those expectations at the same time running a school district and making sure we had enough money for kids, right? So that's our number one priority, right? So that was where it all got very – it's all very tricky.
Right, of course. And did you grow up in New York City? Or outside city?
I grew up in Brooklyn, Bensonhurst, born and raised.
I never heard of it. Never heard of it. No, I'm just kidding. That's where Ralph Cramden grew up, in Bensonhurst. Okay.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live. Saturday Fever.
Right, you got it. And I lived in Philadelphia. Okay, I grew up in Philly, and we used every part of the street for our sports, and there was no organized anything. Obviously, times have changed. All right, and so I'm with you on the East Coast thing. But I'm curious about something, okay? What was your school board's reaction to all this? I mean, they must be thrilled that they're finally getting the information they need.
I think different school boards reacted differently. So when we started this, we had different school boards who were really thrilled by that. I think the community was thrilled with that. However, when you're a school board sitting up at the dais and little kids come up and say you're raising their fees, it's really hard to be a school board member, right? So
yeah,
I think managing expectations, and I think process, I think, you know, we can have a whole conversation on school boards later on and the changing of the dynamics and how long it takes.
Sure.
Because think about this takes several years, and school board members change every 2 years. right? There's elections, and if they're changing every 2 years, you're trying to get a school board member up to speed. So I think, you know, various groups, different board members, different times, different expectations. Yes, they're thrilled on one hand, but managing the community is really problematic at times. Challenging.
Well, of course. Yeah. Everybody wants to represent their constituents, but at least now they have the data to look at it.
Right, which is, that is the most powerful thing, right? I want to stress with you that I'll give you an example. Once Jeff and his company were able to track it, we were able to say that we had 3,000 reservations a year period, over 3,000 reservation requests.
Wow.
We're a school district. Now, could you imagine we have 3,000 facility requests, but meanwhile we're trying to educate kids. Of those, 1,900 were internal, meaning internal organizations like home and school clubs, PTAs, foundations. 1,100 of them were external. So you could imagine it was, you know, about two-thirds internal, one-third. But then when you talked about external usage of, like, the fields, what we found out was that internal usage of our fields was 37,000 hours, but external was 31,000 hours, which means – the fields were utilized just as much after school till about 10 o'clock at night than they were during the school day, all at the school district's expense.
Wow.
So that's what we were able to – and I think when people saw that information at the CASH conference, they were really impressed with, hey, here's information to say, look, we're running schools, we're running school programs, and we want to provide this beautiful asset to you. However, we just want you to pay, you know, reasonable cost to maintain them.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have to ask, obviously the role of the school district, and then of course it's part of the community, but the role of the school district is to teach the children, okay, and to have them learn, et cetera. And anecdotally, okay, how does not managing the facilities correctly with the right data impact the instruction and what you're doing for teachers and what you're doing for the kids and all accessible products, you know, the whole story, everything that's out there. Okay. You know, you're constantly under pressure to instruct the kids, and that's your job. Okay. But meanwhile, money's leaking out the bottom of the boat. Okay. And it has to be kept under control. How does facilities management or non-facilities management affect what was going on in the classroom?
So there's a couple of things. So first, there's the funding mechanism and having more money to run programs in general, right? I mean, that's just easy. No, but here's the other one that no one really kind of understands. So physical education, it's a national, you know, it's under the federal law. We have to provide physical education to students, 100 minutes to elementary students, K-5 students, and 200 minutes to middle school and up a week, right? You need facilities to run physical education programs, right? If you don't have facilities that are safe, they're going to impact the health of any student. So it depends on how much value, and I'd say I put quite a bit of value on the physical and social emotional health of kids. Kids got to get out there and run and play and do other things. So that's equally as important. And if you have facilities just, and again, I don't want to be facetious here, but they're just concrete without green space, without play areas for kids to kind of socialize, talk, play, that also impacts the health and the education of the students every day. So
I
think it's equally important. Go ahead.
Especially in a green place like California, you expect green, not cement. You know.
Well, you know, and I grew up. I grew up in New York, where it was all concrete. So going from the concrete, you know, in the streets to the concrete schools, right? There was no place to play. Play wasn't part of what we did. We went to school, right? And then we went out, and you know, we went under the maypole kind of thing. But then we went back into classroom. It was very different back then. So. Yeah.
It was different back then. I'm older than you. Okay, when I was in school in Philadelphia, now you got me thinking here. Okay, we had a blacktop schoolyard. Okay, and in the little playground areas were these giant cast iron monkey bars that you climbed to the top. Okay, and obviously kids fell. Not only did they hit their heads on the cast iron metal, they slammed their bodies into the concrete floor, which isn't funny because we all got up, and we don't want that to happen today.
Right.
Okay, today is a different planet. Okay, people weren't involved. They weren't as involved. Okay, in the schools as they are today, and using the schools. Okay, and depending on the schools. Okay, and we have to be sure that the community understands, and this is something a lot of communities don't understand, schools and their facilities cost money, okay? Mm-hmm. But I always say, if you have a good school district, and I know you do, the housing values remain very strong. First questions people ask is, how are the schools, before they'll move into any community. Period, end of discussion. If you have any choice at all, how are the schools? All right? And if the schools are leaking money, okay, and don't have the great facilities that people, and Los Gatos is high end, okay,
right,
people expect this, okay? They've got to see what's going on. The superintendent, i.e. you, and that school board, okay, have to really look at this, and now you can manage it. That's the difference. Now you can management, which, by the way, they never taught you in graduate school, that you
they
need
know,
new monkey
my goodness.
Parts.
No, they never did, and that's why, you know, that's why part of being a superintendent is giving back, right? It's trying to go out and seeing if anybody wants my help, and if I could offer anything similar to what you're doing, if we can offer some assistance to anyone, let's do that instead of just being isolated in our positions.
And so when the seniors see how much they cost, God bless the seniors, I'm one of them, okay, so double God bless them, as a matter of fact. But when the seniors see how much they cost, and I know it takes time, what's their reaction? Because, you know, they're on fixed income. Who would pick up? Would that be the city? They're not supplying a senior center. Maybe the city can throw some dollars to the school district.
So I think the partnership in any organization, whether it's a small town, whether it's San Francisco, wherever it is, it needs to happen. I mean, what I've learned, which they don't teach you, you're right, in graduate school, is as a superintendent, you need to have close relationships with the police department, town officials, the mayor, all of that. Because when there isn't enough money, like for the senior programs, you've got to go to town council meetings, and you've got to go knock on people's door, and you have to not be afraid to ask. And you have to, and that takes a long time too. So building those relationships. I have great admiration for the town of Los Gatos, and I would never step on their toes as far as jurisdiction. I'm very clear on their jurisdiction versus my jurisdiction. But I also believe that partnerships are extremely important, right? And we can do a lot more if we come together as a society, working together, instead of just being isolated in our silos, whether it's a silo school versus a school district versus a town versus a police department. So that's what I've learned. And I think, again, you probably know this, it takes a long time. It takes, you know, we're just 7 years in the making. It doesn't happen overnight. And so you have to be willing and committed to do that. So I say the seniors of Los Gatos have been probably the most kind to me because I was a fellow Rotarian, and I'm on there. And they're understanding
me
their
too.
Challenge. Yeah. Oh, so understanding their challenges, right, and understanding what they would like takes lots of conversations with them, too, to have those conversations when you're sitting down with the mayor and the town planning commissions, you know, and all those people. So you can't just walk into the town and say, I want money for seniors. You have to understand, and that just takes a long time, which, again, is very, it's challenging because our job is to educate kids too, right? So there's not a lot of hours in the day.
No, there is not, and educating kids is the most important thing. I have to ask you, we'll wind down, but you can come back on, okay? I have to ask you, you were at the CASH conference in Sacramento, okay? Mm-hmm. And obviously there were other superintendents and district facilities managers there, okay? What were they saying about all this, your colleagues?
So, people came up to me and were really fascinated because, if you saw my slide deck, and if you haven't, I can forward it to you, They were fascinated by the usage and the data. When I started my presentation saying this is a case study on patients' persistence and a heck of a lot of humility. And I think, people just were listening, right? And I told him that it took a lot of apologizing on my part because I sent my business office, I trusted my business office. I wasn't micromanaging them. They were doing what they were doing, but when people were unhappy with what they were doing, they were coming to me. So that's the patient's persistence.
Yeah,
so people were really, the story was resonating with them because you had people in the room that were, you know, chief business officials, facility guys who were, you know, asked to do this work. But then you have the superintendents in the room going, yeah, we're the ones who get the complaints at the end of the day. And no one teaches you this. So you're learning all this stuff on the job. So a lot of people were really fascinated by the story. And then when I showed the data points and showed them how much the schools were used after school hours, just as much during the school days, if not more. Like, I mean, if you can imagine this, the school's facilities are used all weekend long too, by church organizations, by any type of senior or youth. I mean, they're going nonstop, and they're going till 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes they were going till 12. You know, they go through permissions. I mean, and by signing up. What we found out is what the facilities were being used through, you know, till midnight some days, and our custodians were leaving at 10. So we had to kind of adjust schedules along the way. They loved that data. They also knew what I was trying to kind of give them, preempt them to not have these conversations without this data. Don't start something without having information.
Right.
Which kind of was what we were doing, but we didn't know enough to know, right? So we were trying to do the right thing.
Well, you did do the right thing. And as soon as you found out an answer, you went to it, i.e. Facilitron.
Right, yeah. Well, we did. It's just the other part about implementing too quickly, too fast. Don't do that is what I would say. It's just understanding you have to understand the cycles of leagues, right, when they can increase their fees, when they're going to change their fees. So if you're going to change things, you're going to have unique unique agreements with each of the different leagues.
Right. Right. It's just fascinating. Again, and I'll say it again, you can't go ask those people without the data to back it up because they don't even realize it. Okay? The lights are on in the auditorium and there's a custodian there till 10 o'clock and a police officer might make a round, et cetera, and, you know, just to make sure everything's okay. And all that costs money. Okay?
Correct.
And if the school district can't take it away from instruction. It has to be paid.
Well, and I think the part that you need, kudos to the leagues that invest a lot of money and they invest a lot of volunteer time, right? Lots of kudos to them. I mean, they have a lot of in-kind services. But so there's the in-kind and the real cost, right? I mean, that's what Facilitron allowed us to do, to capture that, right? Valuing the relationship that we've had with the organizations for 50 years. I mean, that was what this was a guiding principle, but at the same time saying, these are real costs. Here's the PG&E bill, right? Here's the electrical bill, here's the water bill. You know, we're not trying to make money. We never were trying to make money. We were just trying to recoup, and I'd often say cost neutral.
So it doesn't hurt the instruction. So it doesn't hurt the instruction. And by the way, you just made me very upset saying that 1970 was 50 years ago. Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. I'm getting old. Oh, my God.
We both are.
Thanks, pal. I appreciate that. Okay. Everybody, thank you. Thanks, Diana. 1970 was 50 years ago. Thank you very much. That's wonderful news. Okay. I'm only kidding you. You know that. Okay. But it's
amazing. Part, right?
Let me ask you this. Just the bottom line here. I just want to ask this one question. All right. Los Gatos, the kids, I know they go off to the high school district. I bet the schools are pretty damn good when all said and done.
Top in the nation. Yeah, and the high school is ranked like one of the top of 20 in the country, I think. Yeah,
wow.
It is one of those. I would say as a public educator, you just need we need a lot of committed educators and board members and volunteers all working together to get things done. And I think you can model any school district after just best practices. And I think that's what I wanted to share. That you don't have to be Los Gatos to do this. Right. You can be anybody. Right,
and the last question, Los Gatos, is that cats? Los Gatos. Gatos is cats, isn't it?
It is the cats. The mountain lions, the cats of the mountains of Santa Cruz Mountains.
So what's the name of the team? What's the name of the school team? Are they the Wildcats?
The Wildcats. You're right.
Am I right?
Yeah, you are right. Yes.
The Los Gatos cats. I just wanted to make sure I was accurate on that. okay? Because if it was anything else, I would really have to protest. Okay, it has to be
right.
It has to be the cats. It has to be the cats. All right, Diana,
right
thank
on.
You so much. But I want you come on again and talk. You can walk us through this whole process over the course of time. I'll be in touch with Jeff over Facilitron too. But what you're doing, just providing the data, is so incredible. Okay, these things cost money, everybody. You got to manage it. Okay, Diana Abadi, the New York girl makes good in California. Thank you so much.
Thank
by
you
the way,
so much. It's a pleasure.
Are you any good at stickball? Since we're on the subject, are you any good?
I'm pretty good at stickball. Yeah, and paddleball too. I mean, I'm pretty good at all that stuff.
There you
I'm
go,
not so good
ladies
at lacrosse and
gentlemen. And
all these other sports here out here.
Yeah. I'll tell you about lacrosse some other time. My kid was the lacrosse goalie. We'll move on from that subject, like being the goalie
all
of
right.
the dart team. Okay. Thank you so much, Diana. You're wonderful, and
thank
continued
you.
Great
Take
fortune.
Care.
With a wonderful school district. Okay, just a
All
great
right.
place.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Right.
Oh, thank
bye
you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, is she great or what? That's Diana Abadi, who's the elementary school K-8, okay, superintendent in Los Gatos, California. Extremely powerful community. That's wonderful. Get the data you need. Facilitron, since we talked about it the whole time, .com. Facilitron.com. Jeff Bennett is the president over there. Okay, and I met him at TCA. This is fascinating to me. All right, well, archiveeducation-talkradio.org. We will tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening.